You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romantasy podcast book club. I'm Christina, joined by my book besties Kim and Anna, and together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books. Hi!
Hello.
We are so freaking excited. We are here talking about Onyx Storm theories, predictions, thoughts, what's going to happen. These theories have been on our brain literally the entire last calendar year, and we're so excited to bring you our favorites, to bring you the ones that the fandom are talking about the most right now, and break down the receipts of each of them.
Oh my gosh, we cannot wait. We have been beside ourselves so excited to record this episode, and I cannot wait to dive in and just dig into all the nitty-gritty details and receipts. It's going to be so much fun.
Dive, dig, all the things. Okay, but first, before that, let's shout out some of our favorite people.
Yes, we are going to do some tier two book betches shout outs. If you guys aren't aware, one of the benefits of our tier two patrons is that you get a shout out in one of our episodes. So today we are going to be shouting out Amanda Carbajal, Maya Parmar, Sophie Duindam, and Laura Grace. Thank you guys so, so much. We love you.
Thank you. We love you. We love you so much with our whole hearts. We also want to thank everyone who has taken the time to rate and review the show wherever you are listening. If you're looking for another way to support the podcast, rating and reviewing is a fantastic way to do that. We really, truly appreciate everyone who takes the time to do that for us.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. Y'all are the best.
You're the best. All right. Let's go. Let's do it.
Yes.
This is your spoiler warning for all of Fourth Wing, all of Iron Flame, for every blurb, every excerpt, everything that has come out thus far about Onyx Storm. Also, every interview Rebecca has done up until now about Onyx Storm. Pretty much everything in the Imperium series that exists up until December of 2024.
Exactly.
Okay. You've been warned. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. Okay. So we're starting off with what is arguably the biggest question in the fandom. What is Violet's second signet? Everyone has gone so hard on this. The fandom has really excelled at these theories, but we think there's three in particular that everyone is kind of focusing around. Before we jump into those, though, just some refreshers on the clues Rebecca, our queen, has given us thus far about the second signet in interviews. First, she has said that Violet's second signet has already manifested in Iron Flame. She also says everything we need to know about the second signet is in the book, and she thinks that the hints are obvious.
Clearly not. Clearly not.
Bex.
If I can call you Bex.
Find that a little insulting, actually. Yeah,
we pride ourselves on being fairly intelligent, but you're making us feel real dumb.
Exactly. Which does make me feel like maybe she is seeing us and she's like, you guys are doing too much.
Yeah, 100%.
But you know what? I don't care. Because it's fun to do too much, and that's why we're here. What, are we just going to do nothing?
No, that's not fun.
So before we jump in to the main three theories that everyone's discussing here, we do want to say we're going to be going in depth on these in our next theories episode with some very special surprise guests that will be joining us. But for today, we're going to just briefly touch on two of them and then really kind of go in on one But we will be going in depth again on them in our next episode with some very special friends of the podcast. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So first we're going to talk about Intensic. Is Violet an Intensic? Maybe a different kind of Intensic than Zayden. People are thinking that one of the biggest pieces of evidence here is the throne room scene. If you pay attention to the italics and the quotation marks in that scene, it does feel like something different is happening and that Zayden is thrown off by it. People think that is the moment where it manifested. The other biggest piece of evidence here is her need for information. She even refers to Zayden saying, "You are someone who really needs information." And then she says, "I really need information." There's a lot of information talk here.
Yeah.
All right. Option number two is truthsayer. So people are also talking about this with the need for information, but in a different way. She needs information, but she also needs truth. If we all remember the amount of times this girl talks about truth and lying and needing the truth and secrets in the second book, really, that feels like a clue that Rebecca's like, guys, she literally can't stop talking about the truth and secrets. Like, I'm telling you, I'm spraying it at you.
I couldn't be more clear.
Truly. And if that is true, she also couldn't have been more clear with the blurb on the back of Onyx Storm, where the quote says, "They need an army, they need power, they need magic, and they need the one thing only Violet can find, the truth." So to me, and I think to a lot of people, that felt like too obvious and too easy that on the back of the book, she's just going to tell us what is one of the biggest questions of the fandom right now.
Agreed. I read into that more as like Violet is the only one that can search for the truth because out of all of the writers, she has the mind of a scribe. And that's come up quite a lot in the first two books. They kind of all look to Violet to be like, is this information true?
Totally.
And I agree. I think it would be a little too obvious. I'm hopeful that that's not it. Just for that reason.
Agreed. I also think maybe like there is a truth we're going to find out in Papa Sorengil's research. She's the only one that can find it. Maybe yes. There is a truth centered around a cure with Andarna, and she's the only one that can find it because she's bonded to her. I think that truth could mean lots of other things, not specifically truthsayer, but she really dropped that as a bomb, knowing I think that it would make people think this direction.
100%.
All right. And Kim, talk us through what I think is your favorite one of these second signet theories.
Oh my gosh. This is by far my favorite, and it is the amplifier theory. I'm going to talk through three instances in particular in Iron Flame of potential amplification. Now, it's important to note that these three instances happened after Andarna wakes up from the dreamless sleep. There is some discussion within the fandom of some instances when Andarna was still asleep in the dreamless sleep. And we're unclear at this stage if Violet was able to channel through Andarna while Andarna was asleep. So for the sake of this conversation, I'm going to say that she was not. And so that the only instances that we're going to talk about are ones after Andarna woke up. Because there's an instance with Rhiannon and the dagger. I'm sure you guys know what we're talking about. However, that was when Andarna was asleep. So we're going to count that out for now. But instance number one, when they are at Cordon, they're fighting that Venom that came out of the box. Mira is able to create her own shield to protect herself, Violet, and Brennan. Now, Mira is usually not able to create shields outside of the wards, but in this instance, she was. And Violet is touching Mira when Mira does this. So that is really, really interesting to me.
What else would that have been? Like, that truly feels like the definition of amplifying. She is able to literally amplify her signet by touching her.
Exactly.
And really, that could have been the moment in the throne room. Like, she's amplifying Zayden's intensiveness by touching him. And that's how she can jump in his mind, you know?
Exactly.
Okay. Sorry.
You read my mind because that's where we're going. So the second instance, this is a little bit foggy to me. I'm not totally sold on this instance, but it's when Kat and Violet are doing their spar challenge. They're fighting. And Violet is feeling really intense rage. And Kat also seems to be really, really revved up too. Like, it kind of doesn't make sense that Kat is so on this level. We know why Violet is, and I think I can speak for all of us when we were also feeling some intense rage. But anyways, so Violet's feeling intense rage and intense emotions. She's touching Kat. We know that Kat's signet is mind work. So potentially Violet was like amplifying Kat's mind work signet, and then the rage was like spilling over onto Kat, if that makes sense.
I love this.
Okay, and then of course we have the throne room scene. Now, this could be like Zayden projecting his thoughts directly into Violet's mind. We know that that happened, okay? We also know that intense emotion brings on flares of power, especially for Violet and especially during orgasms. That really seems to trigger it. We know in book one, that is when she manifested her first signet during a steamy moment, okay, with Zayden. So this would make sense for her second signet to also manifest during this scene. So it's plausible to explain that with their thoughts entangling so completely that she was reading his thoughts and intentions through their bond, which is his power, not hers, by way of her amplifying his power in that moment. Okay.
Interesting.
So a kind of a different take. Instead of being intrinsic, she's amplifying his intrinsic power.
Right.
So remember, all three times she's touching the person, all three times she's feeling intense emotion, and all three times take place after Andarna wakes up from the dreamless sleep. Now, speaking of Andarna, there's kind of a micro theory under this amplifier theory, and it's that her second signet is actually mirror, not amplifier, because we know that Andarna is a chameleon type of dragon. She can mirror her surroundings. She can change her scales colors to blend in. So wouldn't it make sense if her second dragon is able to mirror her surroundings? Wouldn't it make sense that the signet that she is channeling through a chameleon dragon is to be a mirror to everybody else's signets?
I freaking love this. I love that Andarna is involved and it seems particular to her because I think that's something that we would do. I think that makes sense.
Does that not make so much sense?
It does. And it just feels cooler than regular amplifier somehow. I think so too. I really like it.
The only reason I don't know that that's going to happen is because, again, Rebecca has said it's underwhelming. And I think mirror is actually a really cool signet. But I guess like underwhelming is a subjective term. Like maybe what she thinks is underwhelming is something that we think is cool.
You know, that's true. That's right? A possibility. And I also think that maybe in her mind, something underwhelming is that she doesn't really have her own. She just makes other people's bigger and better, you know?
Exactly. Like, you know, a lot of people talked about how her first signet was physical power, where she is physically weak. And this one is helping her friends, helping those around her, giving them strength. And I feel like it fits with her personality. I feel like it fits with what she needs. And I think it fits with Andarna, most importantly.
Yeah.
All this to say, we are so excited. This is obviously the biggest question of the fandom is what is her second signet? And we cannot wait to see what it is.
I cannot wait to see how she reveals this to us. Because I think it's going to go one way or the other. Either we're going to find out and Violet's not going to know. The reader's going to get a clue and be like, this is it. And be like, come on, Violet, look alive. And we're going to be frustrated. Or we're all going to find out at the same time. It kind of... think she's gonna have us find out first, or like the sleuthy sleuths will be like, this is obvious, you know?
Oh yeah, Anna's gonna call it like chapter 3 of the book.
Third paragraph, yeah. She's gonna be like, well, done. You guys, I mean, it was obvious, right? And we'll be like, no.
No.
Calling it. But I hope if that is the case, we don't get too long of us being like, Violet, come on, please. Yeah.
Please, just look alive.
Very DM from Kindred's Curse. Like, we don't need too much of that energy. We love DM and we love Kindred's Curse. But
yeah, we do.
We did yell at her a lot.
We did. And I need to not yell at Violet because I'm not going to lie to you. The whining and the fighting with Zayden and Iron Flame was not my favorite.
Yeah.
I just felt like, shut up and take your pants off. Like, Zayden Ryerson is in love with you. So, like, act accordingly. You know what I mean? Like,
so be thankful. Be great.
Be thankful because there's a line of people waiting to take your spot. Okay, Miss Ma'am? Okay. Anyways.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, we are going to move on to our sassy, fire-breathing Andarna.
I love her so much.
We are going to talk about Miss Andarna. We're going to talk about Papa Sorengil's research, how those two are connected together. I am so excited to dive into this. So first, we are going to do kind of what we know about Andarna, her past, her den, etc. We're going to do a little history lesson with Kim.
Uh-oh. Mic drop.
I have big shoes to fill, everybody. I am nervous. Okay. So... we know that 600-ish years before the events of Fourthwing, the first six bonded with the six breeds of dragons. They did this to create the wards, and the dragons did it for protection. Their hatchling grounds needed protection. And as Taryn says, we don't have opposable thumbs to create wards ourselves.
I've missed him so much.
He's wonderful. He's wonderful. So we know that General Darrymore was the big bad enemy of the Great War 600 years ago. He ruined the barons, which caused all of the dragons to leave that area. However, the seventh dragon den left Andarna's egg behind to contribute her fire to the wardstone in case it ever needed to be activated again. If we remember from the end of Iron Flame, Violet asks Andarna, would you be willing to breathe fire and imbue this wardstone? And Andarna says, it's why I was left behind. So obviously, Andarna is a special seventh breed of dragon. She is the head of her own din. That's why she was able to bond Violet as a juvenile. That's why the Empyrean allowed her to do it, because technically they had to. She's the head of her own din. She can kind of do whatever she wants, which is a little bit scary because she seems kind of unhinged, like in the best way.
In the most amazing way. She's like the most unhinged little princess that is just like, well, I want to do this now. And Tyrion's like, God damn it. God damn it.
Damn it.
Damn it.
Okay, so we also know that Andarna heard her elders talking about the weak daughter of one of their generals who was forecasted to become the head of the scribes. However, Andarna knew Violet would be hers because she has the mind of a scribe and the heart of a writer. So she waited for Violet to come of age before she hatched.
How did she?
So crazy.
Does she have the knowledge of 650 years in her little adolescent brain? Is it like, is...
What do you mean?
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Yeah, 100% agree. So many questions.
Because if she could hear them talk about her, mm-hmm. then we're supposed to think she's just sitting in that egg waiting for people to talk around her so she has something to do, to listen to, for 650 years. Like, did they at least, like, take her around places where they're like, oh, let's, like, take the egg.
They, like, put her in a wagon and, like,
put to the party. At least she can hear some stuff going on. Like, did they, like, read books to her or something? Like
they have a sign-up sheet to go entertain Andarna.
Seriously. She's sitting in there in silence for years, and she's a special princess. Like,
she is.
They had to do something.
Was it like, all right, who's going to go read a book to Andarna?
Just give her some gossip. Just talk about anything at all.
Spill that tea. And apparently they did. They were talking about Violet, and she immediately somehow, in the egg, was like, nope, that's mine, and I'm going to, now I know to wait for her to hatch. Which, first of all, I didn't know you could do that.
Right.
Like,
yes.
I thought it was kind of like giving birth. Like, it just kind of happens.
You just hatch. So then, okay, let's go back then. So then do all baby dragons have the wherewithal of, I'd like to hatch right now? Or is it because they somehow did this thing to make her live that long inside
the
egg, which shouldn't be normal?
No.
Right? And then they, like, what taught her? Did she have tutors? Or people come in? Like, this is what a scribe is. This is what a writer is. Like, how does she even know all this information?
I don't know, because she's older than Taryn.
So many questions.
Okay. So more questions is, how does this connect to Papa Sorengil's research? Well, we know that feather tails were mentioned in Papa Sorengil's research. In Fourth Wing, Colonel Atos tells Violet this, and then Varish in Ironflame brings it up again. Okay, how do we think Andarna is connected to Papa Sorengil's research? Like I just said, we know that his research was focused on Feathertales as well as researching the second Krovlin uprising. We also know that Andarna hatched less than 1 year before Papa Sorengil died. So there was about a year overlap where both Papa Sorengil and Andarna were alive at the same time. Now, as I said, Varish says this to Violet in Iron Flame. It's ironic, don't you think? From what Colonel Atos told me, your father was writing a book on feather tales, dragons which hadn't been seen in hundreds of years. Note, the Krovlin Uprising was 200 years ago. So hundreds of years, 200 years ago. So I'm putting that together as like something happened with feather tales during the second Krovlin Uprising. Okay, anyway. Isn't it a coincidence your father was writing a book on feather tales and then you ended up bonded to one? Coincidental, I correct him. The word you meant to say is coincidental. Is it? He seems to ponder. My stomach turns. Is it? She asks Taryn and Andarna. Taryn says, I know nothing of your father's research, but Andarna has gone silent. Which, we know Taryn is actually telling the truth, because at the end of Iron Flame, Andarna confirms that Taryn does not know that she is this seventh breed of dragon. Only the elders know. And Andarna has just been choosing to mostly be black because she wants to be like Taryn.
I can't.
I don't know why this just hits me so much. She just loves him so much and looks up to him that she chose to be black when she could be any color.
It's so sweet.
I love it. I will riot in the streets if either one of them die. I tell you that right now.
Oh.
No, Christina. No. I am manifesting that everyone's going to be fine.
I don't want it to happen.
You can have Jack. You can have, I will name a whole list of people off that you can have. Dane, Colonel Atos, Markham, Melgrin, take them all. I will lead the parade.
Take them all.
You leave Andarna and Taryn alone. Okay, so does this mean that Andarna knew about Papa Sorengil's research? Because she clearly already knew she would bond Violet years ago.
does this mean Papa Sorengo was reading to that egg? Does it mean that he was there reading his research to this egg?
We've solved it. We've solved it. Here's, okay. He was like, you know, I'm just for funsies, I'm going to go see what the dragons are doing. And they're like, we need someone to go sit with Andarna and read to her. Okay, the sign-up sheet is empty. Do you have any time? And he was like, I mean, I've got my research on feather tails. And they're like, perfect. We don't care what
that's
it is.
Perfect. Go read it aloud. She'll love it.
She'll eat it up.
And then in the intro, he's like, well, have I told you about my daughter? And that's what happened.
Yes, exactly.
I do think that it's interesting, this idea that maybe he had something to do with the egg. It just feels mm-hmm. like the thought that she knew about Violet is so strange to me. Like, agreed. How did she know she was going to have the heart of a scribe?
That's what I don't know.
It's very chosen one and chosen one kind of situation, you know?
Very chosen one.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, what else?
100%. Okay, so could this research from Papa Sorengale and therefore Andarna be our missing piece in defeating the Venant? We know that there was a mysterious weapon. Brennan says this to Violet. Something killed off the Venant 600 years ago during the Great War, and we're actively searching for that weapon. Could this weapon be this seventh breed of dragon and their fire specifically? Because we know Andarna killed that Venant. Yes, she did decapitate it. I am aware of that. However, it specifically says she spit out the decapitated smoking head. Now, if Venant cannot be killed by fire, why was the head smoking?
Exactly. Case in point. I think her dragon fire is not just special that they needed to activate the wards. It's also special because it kills Venant. And that's also why they left her behind. She's like, oh, I think I kind of remember that's why they left me. It's something about my fire. But no, there was double meaning with the fire, I think.
Couldn't agree more. I do think that there is something special about her fire. I think that potentially her breed of dragonfire can kill Venant. And so I think that Poppin Sorengale may have uncovered that secret behind activating the wards with the seventh dragon den. We know that his research somehow involved the first six's journals. So in those journals, did he uncover something about this sixth dragon breed that could potentially defeat Venant? If we are to assume this special breed's dragonfire can kill Venant, when we know the other six breeds of dragons, their fire cannot kill Venant.
Exactly. I'm with you.
I just feel like the pieces are coming together.
Well, and then I think that would lead to a lot of things making sense. Like, he got too close to figuring out things about the Venant. And then this really goes along our FOF canon that he, in fact, was killed for sure.
Right. Yes. Okay. So the only other thing to note about Papa Sorengale's research is, where is it? Nobody knows. I mean, actually, Violet knows, but hasn't said for whatever reason. So in Fourth Wing, Violet has a conversation with Colonel Atos and her mother. I forgot that Lilith was very much part of this conversation. I feel like when people talk about it, they say just Colonel Atos. But Violet's mom was also very much wanting Violet to answer this question, and she doesn't. So Colonel Atos basically is like, can we study Andarna? Can we do research on her? And Violet is like, no, I don't think so. I don't think that's going to work for her. And before she can really answer, Taryn warns Violet not to share what power she is channeling through Andarna. So she doesn't share with Colonel Atos. Mm-hmm. But Colonel Atos tells her, the only reference the scribes can find in the archives about the power of Feathertales is hundreds of years old. Which is funny because I remember your father doing a bit of research about the Second Crovlin Uprising, and he mentioned something about Feathertales, but we can't seem to find that tome. He scratches his forehead. Mom looks at me with expectation, as though to ask me without actually asking. I don't believe he finished his research on that particular historical event before he died, Colonel Atos. I couldn't even tell you where his notes are. The words are as true as I can make them. I know exactly where his notes are. In the one location he spent the majority of his after-hours time. But there's something about Taryn's warning that makes me simply unable to tell them.
Where he spent his after-hours time is what? Like at a pub? Is it at the bar? Like,
yeah. The bowling alley? Like, I don't...
Was he a bowler? But like the after hours time is so cryptic and specific. Because mm-hmm. yes. why would Lilith not know that?
Thank you, Christina. That's my big question, is if it's after hours time, so it's not the archives.
Yeah.
If it's his study, surely Lilith would have known that it was in there.
But is Lilith playing the double agent right now? And she does know where it is. And if Violet tells, then she's going to have to go move it or something, you know?
Okay, but here's my question. Is if Violet knows where it is, why has she not gone to double check that it's still there? She literally does not bring up the research again. She doesn't think about it in her mind. It does not get brought up again at all. And I'm like, so you know where it is and you're just blindly having faith that it hasn't been moved or found and you're not ever going to try to go find it?
That to me tells us it's somewhere difficult to get to or somewhere not immediately at Beskai.
Oh.
Maybe somewhere harder to get to. I hope it is, because if not, why would we have not gone to grab it and give it to Jasenya like 600 pages ago?
Thank you. It's very strange.
It's absolutely strange. Do you know what else is strange?
What?
That we don't know this man's name. We don't know what Papa Sorengel's name is. This really, no spoilers, there's another series that I'm sure everyone's read where you don't know someone's name and then you don't realize you don't know someone's name for a long time. But I had that moment where I was like, why don't we know his name? And I really feel like there's gonna be a cool reveal here.
Yeah.
One, we don't actually know if Sorengel even is his name. It is,
right,
I guess, custom that Lilith would have taken the name and the kids have the name. But also, maybe Lilith kept her name because she was rising up in the ranks. She was becoming general. Also, there are lots of moments where Lilith is like, Sorengels don't do that. Sorengels don't get carried. It feels like she has ownership over the name Sorengel in a way that it's her lineage. So
100%.
Then do we not know either of this man's names? Like, we don't, no. we know nothing, Jon Snow, about Papa Sorengel. Like, this is wild. It feels really purposeful that we don't know his name at this point.
Agreed, for sure. It's very weird that it's only ever like my father, you know, all another of this kind of stuff. Your theory. Father.
Yes. Another fun theory is, are we going to find out that maybe his last name is, maybe he, therefore Violet, is a descendant of the original six? Maybe somewhere in a journal, she's going to be like, huh, that's weird. That's my dad's name or something. And we're going to figure out that's why she's this chosen one, that she's actually maybe descended from the original six.
Oh my God. Yes.
Wouldn't that be interesting? Yes.
Oh my God. I love that. That's so exciting, Christina. I know. I feel like we will definitely find out his last name in this book. I hope we do. Or first name. I'll take anything.
I'll take either. Truly. If she does nothing. I mean, I know she has a lot of bows to tie up and we have five books. So like, I get it.
True.
But I think that the research has got to be a key piece in this. And to understand the research, we have to kind of understand him, I think. And so I think we're going to have to go down that path. I think what's going to be really hard or tricky writing-wise is that her mom, who is her person who could tell her, is gone. So how are we going to find this stuff out? Is Aan Darna going to remember something? Is Mira going to remember something? Is Brennan going to remember something?
It'll be tricky with Lilith now also gone to kind of connect those dots for Violet and her dad.
Exactly. We're not going to go like ask Markham.
No.
But yes. Okay. So let's move on to just a general umbrella topic of our big bad of the series, Venon. And specifically our beloved now Venon Shadow Daddy. So many major questions and concerns right now in the fandom. What is going to happen to Zayden? How is this going to affect Demonic Storm? Let's have a little group therapy session, chat through some of these anxieties as they relate to our beloved Zaddy. Okay, so some people are very concerned that he is going to be evil Zayden. Like, we're going to get an Anakin Skywalker situation here. I don't think that is the case. At the end of the day, Rebecca loves a romance. And yes, you do give up a little bit of your soul, but he didn't turn for power. He didn't turn because he's Jack Barlow. It was for love.
It was for love.
Yeah. So I think that'll have something to do with him keeping rooted in himself. And I also think a clue that he's going to be himself here is what we've gotten so far. So the back of the book blurb, we get him saying to her in her head, "You're astounding," which is so classic Zayden. And then we also get in the Cosmo excerpt him saying, "Tell me something, Violence. Why is it always you?" Which is so classic them. I love that he's going back to Violence, and it gives us this like reassurance that they are still kind of them.
Agree.
And the last key piece of evidence here is Violet's inner monologue in that Cosmo excerpt saying, "He may technically be an initiate, but he's nothing like the Venon we just fought."
Yeah.
But I do think that this Venonism is going to affect him in other ways. So first off, I think maybe this could affect his powers, his magic, his signets. There is an epigraph in Iron Flame that states, "Though there is some debate, it is greatly believed that turning Venon heightens one of the Dark Wielder's senses. It is this scholar's belief that the one responsible for the death of King Grethwild developed keener eyesight," which keener makes me feel like it is a heightened, already existing power. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So I think that maybe this is a clue here that we're going to get like super intense.
Ooh.
Like, what if he can read more than intentions now? What if he's a different kind of intensic? And now what if he has like super shadows? What if that's what Brave the Dark meant. It is his shadows. Like, he can just black out the light completely.
Yes.
And I love the idea of getting to see a little more. I mean, he's always been a little bit morally gray, but getting to see like a little more bad boy Zayden.
Like a bad zaddy.
Bad shadows, you know? But I do think that she's going to play with him struggling in some fashion. She's given us too many hints that the need for Venon to pull from the source is like an addiction. So I also feel like he's going to battle this hunger and the need to pull again. This is a very ominous quote from Rebecca Yarros in this Variety article. One of the things I love to play with is that absolute power corrupts absolutely, and that when you want magic and can't have it because you haven't been chosen by a dragon or a griffin, what will you pay for it? And people will pay with their souls. You see it in our society all the time. People will sell their souls for power. So it's a matter of how much of his soul did he exchange? And once you start, how do you stop? And is it an addiction? Oh, Nelly.
Rebecca. I don't love that.
Agreed. How much of his soul did he exchange is really troubling.
Mm-hmm.
Again, mm-hmm. I have to hold hope. I don't think he's going to be evil Zayden. I think she's going to be able to pull him back. But that soul exchange is really tricky. And the use of the word addiction. So the need to pull here is really going to be quite dangerous and quite troubling, considering the blurb states that, quote, now Violet must journey beyond the failing Aredian wards to seek allies from unfamiliar lands to stand with Navarre. The trip will test every bit of her wit, luck, and strength, but she will do anything to save what she loves, her dragons, her family, her home, and him. So what does this mean? Is she going to go on this quest without him? I really, really hope they're not separated during this book.
I know.
But I think it's going to be really hard for him to go beyond the wards.
Yeah.
But when he goes beyond the wards, he is going to feel that pull. He's going to feel this addiction. So does that mean that he'll stay behind because that pull is going to be too much? I personally think his need to protect her is going to outweigh that.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might actually take the serum. So if you remember the serum that they gave them when they dropped them in the woods and they had to like survive in the thing.
Okay.
So the serum, if you remember, blocks Venon from channeling power from the source, but it also dulls the connection between riders and their dragons as well as their signets. So is that going to put us in a scenario where he goes outside the wards to be with Violet to help on this mission? And because he doesn't want to leave her alone to test every bit of her wit and luck and strength, and he just needs to be there to protect her.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
But then he can't because he doesn't have his signet. So are we setting ourselves up here for someone else to have to step in and maybe protect her? And we're going to get jealous Zayden, cough, Arik.
What?
This is my theory here. What if Arik comes with them? He would be a logical person to come with them. He's a prince. We need him for negotiations. He knows things. And he can protect Violet. And Zayden can't because he doesn't have his signet. And then we get jealous Venon Zayden.
Oh my God. Shut up. I love this.
Right?
I love this.
Because we got to see Violet be jealous with Kat. I really want to see that flipped. I really want to see Zayden jealous. Now, I will break down all our theories of Arik and Halden in our next episode. That is an unhinged theory I am working on and will have developed for that episode. But if they have to all go out on this mission together and him maybe having to use his magic to protect her, and Zayden will have to let him because he won't have his magic.
I love this because I felt like Zayden was not jealous of Dane, and like, not really. He wasn't threatened by him. And so I would personally love to see Zayden be a little bit jealous and be like, yeah, that's right. Someone else can protect your girl.
I want it. I want it. And it would be such a cool juxtaposition with him being bad, scary Venon, but also being like,
but do you still like me? Like me? Like, do you still?
Yeah, but you like me too, right?
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm still your favorite, right?
Too.
Oh my God, Christina, I love that. I'm so excited to hear more about Arik and Holden and all of that. Yes! I cannot wait.
Okay. Another big question in the fandom is, who is the sage/general/maven? we thought that this person was the sage. Then they were like, JK, I'm the general, which we also know means that they are a maven. For the sake of this conversation, we're going to call them the sage because it just is how we met them and it's easier. So first theory here is the sage Naelin? Cairn's first writer, who supposedly died saving Brennan, but, considering Brennan is very much alive, clearly that story is already suspect. Now, the key evidence here is we think that maybe Naelin may have turned Venon instead of dying, and more on that and the particulars there on our next theories episode. But my main piece of evidence here that I find fascinating is if this is true, this would explain why the sage can influence Violet and Zayden and speak to Violet in her dreams before Zayden even has the fight with the sage, because of his existing bond with Taryn, because he still has some sort of little thread to his bond with Taryn. Therefore, he can access Violet. He can access Zayden's mind and nightmares because he's channeling it through what is left of his bond with Taryn.
What? I did not even think about that.
Right?
Wow. I'm speechless.
Because that would make sense.
Would totally make sense.
And would set up this just heartbreaking conflict and moment for Taryn to have to face his former corrupted writer. And we also have to remember, when Brennan is telling Violet about Naelin, Taryn says, quote, roughly in her head, "We will no longer speak of the one who came before."
That's very interesting.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
That would be so sad. That would be so heartbreaking.
But like, also, something about the nightmares has always felt off to me, how the sage can just like bebop in there.
So I have heard that there are people that are using this as evidence of Violet being intrinsic, that she is actually just going into Zayden's mind, and that all of the nightmares are Zayden's actually, and not a combination of Violet and Zayden's. And that this whole time, Violet has been somehow projecting into Zayden's mind just for the nightmares, which seems, I don't know, that seems very convenient to me.
I also think that there are specific moments in the nightmares that are specific to Violet.
Absolutely.
All right, well, stay tuned. We'll break that down maybe further for Patreon, like breaking down all the nightmares.
Ooh, yeah. Let us know if you guys would like us to break down the nightmares, because I agree with you, Christina. They seem very specific to Violet, but then who knows?
But also there's so many clues in there, not only to who the sage is, but also what the hell's going on. So that could be interesting. Okay, so next up in our possibilities for the sage's identity is none other than Papa Soaringale. So some people think that Violet's father actually didn't die. He became a Venon, and therefore, Zissage. So, thoughts here are, Violet's father conveniently possessed so much forbidden knowledge of the Venon. And let's go back to our favorite piece of evidence, the missive, that states, quote, "We have tried every method we know of, as you requested. There is no cure. There is only control." That is sent to Lilith. We think about someone she cares about. What if this was about Papa Soaringale? If Violet's father had been seeking and working toward a cure that ultimately failed, could he have turned Venon in the process, either accidentally in a mad scientist sort of way, or did Markham convince him, "We need a Venon to work on to make this cure. You're going to have to turn Venon so we can work on this together." And ultimately it failed. And that's what he was reporting back, was actually it, we failed.
No.
Now that's a little murky there in the details of the funeral and the things and like,
yeah,
him,
right,
fake dying. But that missive, I keep going back to the missive, you know?
Yeah, that missive is a huge piece going forward. Who was he talking about? What Venon were you studying?
Exactly.
It has to be about Venon. What else could it possibly be about?
Oh, no, yeah. No cure, only control. It has to be. Because we also know the whole reason Jack is alive, he was their special project, trying to find a cure.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, this theory states, was Papa Soaringale the original special project that they turned him to try to see if they could find a cure? Okay, so our last theory here, I think that this one has a lot of weight to it, is the sage / general / maven actually a historical figure from the Great War? What if he is the one and only General Darrahmore? Okay, so if you need a refresher, General Darrahmore ruined the land that is now known as the Barrens and was the big bad enemy of the first six in the Great War. Now, in every piece of context about General Darrahmore, like literally every single thing, he is always referred to as General Darrahmore. They never even say just Darrahmore. It's always General Darrahmore. very specific. And the sage is very specific and very clear to make it known that he is a general.
Oh.
They say, a sage, he laughs. I am a general. General's in italics. Like, it's a big, important piece of this sage's identity, it almost feels.
Yeah.
Also, in one of the dreams, the sage talks about being centuries old. And it would also make sense if General Darrymore, who, you know, ruined the land, was maybe a Vinnan sucking from the land of the barons. Like, him and his people were sucking the stuff out of the earth, the power, the source.
Yes.
And that's why the dragons left. And maybe he was the Vinnan general. But we can't, in our history books, say that he was a Vinnan general.
Yes.
Because then we'd have to say Vinnan are real. So maybe that is the real history.
Yes.
Now, buckle up.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
My favorite piece of evidence for this. The sage says over and over again, you'll turn for love. The name Darrymore translates from Spanish to give love. Dare amor.
Shut your mouth.
I will not. It is true.
Shut it.
And this sage harps on, you'll turn for love. Love is such a big part of so many of those conversations.
Wow. Oh my God. That is so convincing to me. Like, that really feels like that makes the most sense to me.
Also, the connection of the barons specifically ruining that yes. land. How else are we going to ruin the land of the barons if we don't, like, suck it dry with our venom straws, you know?
Exactly, Christina.
Okay, so those are the three, I think, most fleshed out and most fun ideas of who the Zisage is right now.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love that. I love that. Okay, let's move to Violet's hair color. You guys, this has been such a topic of discussion within the fandom. Lots of theories about what it means. We know that Taryn always refers to her as Silver One, constantly. So the first mention of her hair is at the very beginning of Fourth Wing. Lilith walks up to Violet, picks up her braid, and scoffs at the ends that are silver. And she says, it's like that fever stole all your coloring along with your strength. Lilith is referring to the sickness that nearly killed her when she was pregnant with Violet. And again in Fourth Wing, when Violet sees her mom and Colonel Atos, that conversation that I mentioned earlier, this is what Violet says. Her gaze, her mom's gaze, skims the top of my head, and I know she's looking at the silver-tipped braid she thinks marks me as cursed.
Cursed?
The hair she told me I was better off cutting. Marks me as cursed is a very interesting choice of words.
I forgot that the word cursed was used.
Yes.
That feels specific.
So the main theory about Violet's silver hair is that it's somehow tied to the Vinnan, since the Vinnan drain whatever they channel from. Violet's hair being silver at the ends as if the color has been drained or leached from it. So the main theory is that something happened with Lilith. Either Lilith turned or channeled from the earth to save herself and her unborn child from the fever that was killing them, or a Vinnan attacked and drained her when she was pregnant with Violet. So some people think that Lilith channeled from the earth when she was pregnant and dying of fever. She was desperate to save her baby, so she turned for love. And because she turned for love and not greed, she was able to control it.
Which, sorry, would be a great clue that Zayden's going to be able to control it.
Yes. That's what I was thinking. Like, if you turn for love, if it's behind your intentions why you turn, unlike Jack, maybe those people are able to control it better because they're turning for love and not greed and power.
That's what I hope.
And we know that Lilith says she did everything for her children. She was like, you know my love, that it will be in service to our children.
Wow, that quote is so interesting in this context.
I know.
Interesting.
Also, I don't know how I feel about this, but remember there was a story, Violet's talking to Rhiannon, and she's talking about how she freaked out one time that she thought her mom was Vinnan because she came home from being away and her eyes were red because she was exhausted. And Violet starts screaming and freaking out thinking that her mom turned Vinnan. And everybody was like, oh, no, like, that's a silly story. That never happened.
She's got allergies. Yeah.
She's got allergies. It's the spring.
Yes.
So that could explain that. Maybe that was a time when Lilith did have to pull from the earth. Like, she did get desperate and did have to pull once or twice and accidentally saw Violet. Maybe she tried to stay away during the times that she did have to pull. It explained why Lilith was looking for a cure, that missive that we just talked about from Nolan. She could have been asking Nolan to look for her. And he says there's no cure, only control. And it explains why she kept a Vinnan-killing dagger on her desk. Maybe she was terrified of potentially losing control and she wanted to have it on her in case she did lose control and was able to kill herself before she hurt anybody.
Wow.
Yeah.
All those pieces together really...
I know.
Yeah.
Regardless of all of that, I do think obviously Violet's hair is tied to something that happened while Lilith was pregnant with her. And I'm hoping that we find out what that is in Onyx Storm. I'm hoping that her hair gets explained. But there is another silver hair girly that comes up in Onyx Storm. And we call her Silver Hair Girly from Cosmo. Because she's from the excerpt in the winter edition of Cosmopolitan magazine. And her name is Silver Hair Girly from Cosmo. Okay, that's how we'll be referring to her. If you guys have not read the excerpt, spoilers if you have not. But we know that there is a dark wielder with a silver braid and something very important on her forehead. Let me read that to you.
Please do.
Two dark wielders dressed in scribe robes yank at the unmoving door handle to Jack's cell while a female pulls her ruby-hilted sword across the neck of a second lieutenant who's been pinned to the thick table with daggers through his hands, and a fourth stands at the edge of the shadows. Her long silver braid swings free of her hood as her attention whips in our direction, and her eerie red gaze jumps to mine and widens slightly under a faded tattoo on her forehead. My blood chills when a smirk tilts her mouth, distorting the red veins at her temples, and then she, disappears. I blink against a sudden breeze that rustles a loosened strand of my braid and stare at the empty space she'd occupied. At least I think she had. Am I seeing things now? No, Violet, I don't think you are.
Absolutely not. She disappeared. She apparated and winnowed and all of the above.
So the only other person in this whole series that has ever been mentioned to have silver hair is Suri. If you remember at the beginning of Iron Flame, they're at Ryerson House, they're having an assembly meeting, and there is a woman who has like olive skin and a streak of silver hair. Other than that, this is the only other person, but it's specifically noted that she has silver hair, like Violet.
And it's in a braid. It just feels too specific. It's too much for it not to be connected. That's another thing that keeps me up at night. For sure.
Like, what does the silver hair mean? Who was the silver haired person? Was it Violet from the future? Was it, I don't know.
We go into a few of those in our Cosmo excerpts breakdown.
Yeah.
So check out more of those there. But it's definitely someone important, hands down.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to end on this theory, kind of a prophecy, if you will, that I am so excited about.
I'm so excited. I haven't read it. I'm so excited. Okay.
Okay. So you remember the Fables of the Baron, the book that Violet grew up reading that's like a banned book. There's not a copy of it in the archives. Nobody knows about it. Jacinia doesn't know about it. Tis a big secret. And that is where she read about the wyverns and all of that kind of stuff. But it was a fable. It was a fairy tale. It wasn't real. It was fiction. Oh, turns out it is. Okay, so here is a quote from the Fables of the Barons that makes me wonder if there's going to be some sort of prophecy. This is the quote, but it was the third brother. Keep in mind, also, Violet is the third sibling.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
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 Third sibling.
Yeah.
Okay, but it was the third brother who commanded the sky to surrender its greatest power. Now, at the end of Fourthwing, the venom that stabs Violet. Here is what that venom says to Violet. Such untapped power. No wonder we were called here. You could command the sky to surrender all its power. And I bet you don't know what to do with it, do you?
Shut up.
Says the exact same thing as the Fables of the Barons to her.
Shut up, Kim.
The exact, literally. It says, but it was the third brother who commanded the sky to surrender its greatest power. You could command the sky to surrender all its power.
What? She's the third brother.
She is the third brother. I think this is a prophecy.
Yes.
Doesn't that kind of sound like draining? Like surrender all its power.
Yes.
You could drain the sky of power and channel that into defeating the venom.
Because they pull from the ground and you pull from the sky. Yes.
Exactly.
Oh my God. This is wild.
I know.
Also, that phrasing is too specific. It's too specific.
That's not a coincidence. That is, they literally say almost the verbatim thing.
Mind blown.
Now, we actually know that Violet's signet is actually raw power, but she wields through lightning because that's what she's the most comfortable with right now. But her signet is not actually lightning.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So if she's able to command the sky to surrender its power, she could put that power back into the earth and restore things that have been drained by the venom.
I'm obsessed with this.
Those lines being the same have to mean something. They have to.
And then there's a full circle prophecy. It feels like a Deathly Hallows fable.
Yes.
Tie up in a bow, beautiful thing. I love this.
I think she's part of some prophecy that goes along with what we were talking about earlier with the Chosen One thing. I think that she is the Chosen One who is able to wield raw power, raw like magic as it were. And she's going to be able to like drain the sky and use that to defeat the venom, potentially along with Andarna's Dragonfire.
Exactly. And maybe that's why Indarna woke up. Maybe that's what it is. That's what she has been waiting for.
Yes.
Not specifically Violet, but this chosen one who can channel the power from the sky.
Absolutely. I think she's the chosen one. And I think she is going to be the third brother, third sibling to vanquish the Venom.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a perfect place to end it. That I love that last one. That is really chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Phenomenal work. Phenomenal.
Guys, this was so much fun.
This is so fun. Oh.
We have lots of other fun Onyx Storm stuff coming up. We're going to be doing a couple more Onyx Storm themed episodes in January. So be on the lookout for those. Those are going to be very fun, very special, like we've said.
Yes.
And then, of course, we will be doing chapter chats for Onyx Storm when that comes out. So many. I mean, all the content. We are so excited. We are also going to be in New York.
Mm-hmm. We were able to get 3 tickets. We are very lucky to be able to have gotten these tickets to Rebecca Yarros's New York City stop on her book tour talking about Onyx Storm. Oh. So that is on January 24th. The girls are flying into New York.
Yeah, we are.
And we are going to go see Rebecca Yarros speak on Broadway. And then we are going to tell you all about it. Every detail we will provide you. Don't worry.
Oh my God. We are so excited. We feel so honored to have gotten tickets because that was insanity.
It was the Aristore of the book world.
Okay, I was a little triggered. I'm not going to lie to you. For those of you who tried to get Aristore's tickets, it was giving me bad flashbacks to that. So very, very thrilled that we were able to get tickets. We are so excited. If any of you are also going to be going,
let us know.
Please let us know. We would love to come hug you and say hi before or after the show.
Yes.
That's going to wrap it up here for us. Like I said, lots more Onyx Storm content coming your way. So be sure you are following us on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And until next time, cheers and happy reading.
Cheers, friends. Happy reading.
Bye.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.